to start out, you were named to to lead the system in October, took over, I think it was the beginning
March
of March.
March 1st, yeah.
So you've had some time to get your feet on the ground, and can you talk a little bit about
A little more than 4 months, yeah. A
little bit of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you talk about some of the priorities that you're bringing in?
First thing I did was go around and see every single one of the institutions, meet the leaders and the people I'm going to be working with, boards of trustees, students, faculty, et cetera, to get a real sense of things and to see if my priorities align with theirs, and I'm happy with the... They really do. I also asked Boston Consulting Group to do some work and help us figure out that we're organized around these, you know, most important things. So we have 5 themes. We're leading the Board of Governors through a strategic planning process, and it's just what you would expect. Affordability and access, accountability and quality. And so those are the things that I'm talking about, that they're talking about, the legislature's talking about. So it's not we all agree what the issues are. That's great. We need to figure out what the solutions are. That's the next.
Sure. And as you go through this, there were a lot of things that the legislature just passed in the new budget that affect a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the $500 tuition for 3 institutions.
Mm-hmm.
It is Western, UNC
Elizabeth
Pembroke,
City.
And Elizabeth City. $500 tuition, it originally includes 2 other HBCUs.
Yeah.
And so what does that do? What are your thoughts on that right now?
Well, I think it's an exciting innovation that has real possibility, and we at the system office are charged with thinking through how will this work, how will we market it, how will we make it clear to families and students what their prospects are. It becomes implemented in 2018, so we'll have some time to kind of think through some of those deals. The 3 institutions that are part of the program are all close to other states. And they have, they're real competitive forces, like all of higher education, particularly in those areas. They're unique. They have capacity in a time when more people need higher education. So I'm excited about it as an innovation, and I really think it can be a game changer.
There was some concern when it was in earlier phases of drafting that it would really take away from the funding for these institutions. I know there was money put in the legislation to make up for that. But long term, do you have concerns about viability because of it?
You know, every legislative session, provides the opportunity for us to fight for resources, but I'm going to take the, 100-year plus, history of this institution for what it's worth, and that is strong, strong, strong support for its higher education system. And I have every confidence that they're going to fund this program now and in the future. Part of it will be how well it works, how well we design it. I mean, all of those sorts of things that are to come. But I really think that, we can rely on their track record.
Sure. There's also concern that students would see it as kind of a fire sale, if you will, a real discount.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the value of the education isn't as great. Do you think there are ways to overcome that? Do you think that's
something that
needs to be overcome?
We can't simultaneously rant and rave about affordability, and in our constitution in North Carolina, it uses the words free as practicable, and we commend legislators that are working to meet the constitutional mandates for education. We can't simultaneously rant and rave about that and then say, wait a minute, please don't, provide relief for students and families. So we think there are some ways to market the program that will really address that, one of which is a buy-down kind of idea where the sticker price would be this sticker price, and we'd give the legislature credit for filling that piece between what the student actually pays and what the true cost is. But I think, you look at a lot of resumes in your career probably. Nobody is looking at a resume and saying, I've got a baccalaureate or a BS from fill-in-the-blank thing and saying, well, how much did that cost? What did you pay for that? Obviously, lots of students go to school virtually for free because of scholarships and financial aid and other support. So I think it's a bit of a red herring, but we certainly can address whatever concerns that have been raised.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, if it's massively successful, it's possible to see a lot of applications rolling in for a relatively limited number of slots. Do you have any idea yet of ways that these institutions might be able to balance the fact that they may get a lot of very qualified students where this is a way that it's being targeted as a way to also be affordable to everyone.
Yeah, and I think that'd be a good problem to have. You know, the fact that lots of quality people would be ready, willing, and able to get in and out of higher education quickly, I think would be, you know, very compelling to the legislature. So we don't know yet, and that's what's neat about it. It's a great start. It's a pilot notion, an innovative idea that we're going to work hard on to make successful, and we'll see what kind of fruit it bears.
Do you have any sense of how much this could be expanded? Additional institutions? Could it be system-wide at some point?
You know, I don't know yet. I mean, we just really need to learn. I mean, there was a thing in the NNO, I think, just this morning that every single student in North Carolina is within 150 miles of one of these schools. That's pretty exciting. I mean, that's, you know, less than a half a day's drive to very, very affordable opportunity. The other thing that's an often overlooked piece of this same legislation that was ultimately incorporated in the budget is a guaranteed tuition number, so that as long as you're continuously enrolled, you know, we're not going to jack up the price on you. So that is a consistent, you know, assured level of price if you're continue to be enrolled and are successful.
Right, and that's for 4 years, system-wide?
That's system-wide, and it starts this fall, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think there are some concerns. That's been done elsewhere.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's been shown to be difficult budget-wise, just because you're projecting all of this.
Right, exactly.
4 years in the future.
Right.
What kind of pressures does that put on the budget side of things, where you may get a class that comes in, and then the economy drastically changes during their time?
It does put pressure on a legislature to make good for that. It puts institutions on the hook to try to predict, you know, what their exposure is going to be over the course of that experience. But the truth of the matter is, I hope that it's really an important lever for students to see, man, I need to stay hitched and get in and get out because it's financially advantageous to do so, as opposed to kind of this stopping in and out kind of thing that we really have. I mean, that's the problem right now. It's not, I mean, it is obviously price too, but students are, you know, taking too long, taking too many courses, spending too much time. Time is money, and that's a big part of our lack of completion.
And there's a tuition freeze and a 3% cap on student fee increases
as well.
So there's a lot going on the tuition side there.
Yeah.
If we can circle back to HBCUs just real quickly,
sure.
What do you see the role for those in the state system being? $500 tuition is tried at one. Mm-hmm. Are there other strategies maybe that could be implemented at the others to boost them in any way?
Sure. One of the other pieces of legislation that had passed, a year, the NC GAP, what was that, a year ago? Was basically GAP, standing for Guaranteed Admission Program, and it basically required students to start at a community college, and if they did and did so successfully, then they would automatically be admitted to a four-year UNC system institution. And that, as we evaluate, the general administration was called on to do a study of all of that, and as we looked at it further, it had some real unintended consequences. So the legislature has given me and the Board of Governors until the session in 2017 to come up with a different kind of plan to enhance completion, particularly at those places. And so, you know, as you say rightly, there's a lot going on, and we'll be looking at, you know, how do we enhance, you know, kind of that throughput, success, completion, access piece in other ways. And it's a range of tactics from counseling and mentoring and financial aid counseling and student support and on. So
sure.
We're looking at that.
Sure. You've been known for accountability for a long time now and pushing for more accountability within higher education. There are a lot of ways to implement that on a state level. What are the carrots and sticks?
Really?
There's
a lot of them are lacking.
Fair enough. Yeah. But what are the carrots and sticks that you might think about in North Carolina?
I mean, the way I think about it is, you know, as we were talking about a minute ago, that, you know, there ought to be some kind of common metrics that the people can, taxpayers and citizens and policymakers can understand and really get their minds around. And we ought to have some unique things designed around the 17 different unique, missions of these institutions within this system. And I think the what's in it for, you know, to the extent that as human beings we might blanch at accountability, you know, in any sense, that the quid pro quo is, let's have some deregulation. Let's get out of the micromanagement. Let's stop, you know, trying to run institutions either from general administration or the Board of Governors or the state legislature, as long as we're clear about what we expect, when we expect it, and for what price. And so I think there's a win-win here for higher ed administrators and students and faculty, that we want to get great people and we want to let them do their thing.
So what happens to me as an institution if I miss the metrics?
Well, I think, you know, it depends, obviously, you know, how bad, I mean, is it, you know, 0.01% off the bubble, or is it, you know, wildly off? We've never tried this kind of thinking, really, in higher education. Some states are farther along, like our neighbor in Tennessee. And so I think it's a range of remediations or whatever you would call it, based on the lack of performance. But, you know, just like every other enterprise, I mean, we need to be adaptive and responsive. And, you know, when they don't work, things, real consequences need to happen.
Sure.
And conversely, when we thrive and soar, you know, we ought to be incented to do more of it.
Right. So performance-based funding,
yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that.
Okay.
And I wonder if you could talk about what you were saying earlier about accountability at places like Chapel Hill and State that might seem to be doing great.
Well, again, we need to have the right set of metrics uniquely negotiated that's appropriate both for flagships and for people who are on the front lines of access and affordability. It's a different set. And everybody ought to have, you know, stretch goals for whatever their unique mission is. And I think that's something, again, that we need to negotiate and talk about in this system with some relief on the tools and the authorities and the ability to adapt or use funds to meet those objectives. So that's how I see it.
A lot of people have pointed over the years to the UNC system as being special, being really one of the better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing that as you come in, you're seeing, I'm getting a sense that you want to rethink or at least re-question the role the system plays. What's your sense so far of the role of a system, of a general administration office like yours?
Yeah, having been here only 4 months,
right,
I'm early and beginning to, you know, develop some thoughts around that. I think we, you know, just in a nutshell, I would say we've been too light on expectations, clarity of goals, measurement, you know, just the output stuff, and too heavy on prescriptions. And so what is the role of general administration in getting that balance right? And further, where are the things that we can really be helpful on, you know, scale of whether it's payroll or staff and employee recruitment or, you know, development? You know, there are some things that are natural and that, you know, even, I mean, technology that I think we're really looked to provide that leadership, and places where we need to get out of the way.